couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Greyhound, The Old Guard, Relic, Parallax, and Most Dangerous Game. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring a look back at They Live. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is, I don't even know if this is really that new for this week, but I've seen it floating around. They're making a prequel to Mad Max Fury Road, and instead of telling the story of Mad Max, because, well, prequels exist, because there's the Mad Max Road Warrior and Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, which all took place before Fury Road, but this is going to be telling the story of Furiosa, who was played by Charlize Theron in the movie Fury Road. The big news that came out is they're not going to use Charlize Theron for this. And the reason is it's about her when she's younger, when she's in her 20s. And they're talking about getting Anna Taylor-Joy, who was in movies like Split and The Witch, and I think she's in that New Mutants movie. She's similar to Charlize Theron. She's a good actor who has this history as a model, but does some really interesting genre work as well. And I think that's a great choice. The reason they don't have Charlize Theron is because Charlize Theron's in her mid-40s, and there's nothing wrong with that, and that's not saying that women who are actors in their 40s can't act. Charlize Theron proves multiple times a year that she can act. It's just, I don't know if she can play a 25-year-old anymore. And they don't want to de-age her, because I think they feel that's sort of a gimmick. So they're going to recast at a younger age. So that's a big deal. And of course, Charlize Theron is, it's heartbreaking and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, that's just the way it is. If you're going to do a prequel, you got to you have the technology that he did for The Irishman, and they had a younger Al Pacino and a younger Joe Pesci and a younger Robert De Niro. But I remember talking to Al Pacino during a Netflix event that he was saying, well, you know, just because they de-age you, you still got to move around like a guy in his 70s. And they're like, you're supposed to be in your 40s or 50s at this point. Look, I think that Charlize Theron she's got plenty of other things to do, and I'm curious to see this movie, but let's not be ridiculous about it. The next piece is an interesting thing about movie theaters opening or closing or whatever, because there's still, everything's in flux, and right now they're looking at opening schools, and while cases are skyrocketing around the country, especially in very specific hotspots, they're trying to reopen things, and, you know, bad things are going to happen because of this, because people are moving too quickly to get back to normal, and that's why we have such a problem in the U.S., whereas, you know, I just saw a friend of mine on Twitter. He's from Victoria, British Columbia. He's out at the IMAX watching Raiders of the Lost Ark this week because they can in Canada, because the cases have been suppressed. The virus is under control there. It is out of control in a lot of places here. But still, you got film exhibitioners who want a show. And so this group of theaters in New Jersey have sued to try and get the theater open. They're saying blocking their First Amendment right, which is just BS, by the way. I don't even know how you get to that argument. I'm not a lawyer, but you don't have a First Amendment right to open a movie theater. And then a lot of times, you know, if there's a public health crisis, which there certainly is a lot of blowback in that New York metropolitan area, that you got to be really careful about that. You don't want another spike there. If there's a public health crisis, they can restrict that. So, you know, this is not about free speech. Having a movie theater open is not about free speech. The government is not stopping you from speaking. The government is just saying this venue cannot be open with this number of people in such close quarters. But that's the insanity that's going on, because, you know, now they're moving dates. They just had a whole string of dates moved from the Blumhouse group And we'll talk about one of them in a minute, but the Forever Purge was supposed to come out this fall. That's just gotten moved completely to next year. Candyman was supposed to come out this summer, I think, and then it was supposed to come out in August, and now they've moved it to October. We'll see if that happens, because then that release date in 2020, October, got moved from the movie that was supposed to be there, which we'll talk about in the trailer park. But the point is there's still a lot of flux happening here, and there's still a lot of problems that can happen. This is an ever-evolving thing. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to hit is actually one that comes out later because it ties to what I was talking about in the news, and that is Halloween Kills, which is the sequel to the Halloween sequel that came out a couple years ago. Again, you got to remember, there was original Halloween in 1978, and then they did all these sequels that went to and from in the canon, and then they made Halloween, the same name movie, which wasn't a remake, it was a sequel to the original Halloween, just skips all the other sequels. So it goes Halloween, Halloween, and the next one was going to be Halloween Kills. And that was supposed to come out in October of this year, which is where they put Candyman. Well, now Halloween Kills has been bumped to October of 2021. And the final sequel to that, the third and final film in the quadrilogy, which makes no sense, that's going to be coming out. Halloween Ends comes out in October 2022. But right now, this week, when Deborah Hill and John Carpenter made this announcement, they dropped a teaser for Halloween Kills, of course, for next year. Look, I thought Halloween, the sequel, was really pretty good. I would say it's the best Halloween sequel we have. I think it's better than Halloween 2. It's better than anything Rob Zombie did. I'm putting Halloween 3 separately because that's its own little bundle of joy for me. But the Halloween 4 was a nice way to get it back on track. But they stumbled around. Halloween H2O is a good movie. That's the one they made in 1998 with Jamie Lee Curtis. And that was good, but I honestly think the Halloween 2018 was better. So I'm still looking forward to Halloween Kills, and I'm like, take your time, make it work, make it safe, and I want the scariest thing happening in that theater to be Michael Myers on the screen and not microbes floating around in the air. The next one I want to hit really quickly is called Greenland, which opens in theaters supposedly August 14th, but we don't know.
We now are getting word that the fragment has hit Central Florida.
Oh my God.
Wait, are some more pieces gonna hit?
Come on, let's go.
But the sky's on fire.
2 days. They got it all wrong. There's a ton of fragments. Planet killers.
Space agencies are predicting an extinction-level event.
We're gonna be together, all right, kiddo?
We're just trying to get to safety.
They've been tracking the military flights to bunkers in Greenland.
It's our only chance.
This stars Gerard Butler in an action movie, and I think he's trying to build his own brand of disaster movies, because he was in, what was the name of that movie he was in? I think he was a scientist who went up on a space station, and the weather on Earth was going crazy. That was supposedly a big release, but it kind of flew under the radar. I think I ended up watching it when it came out on DVD. That was a couple years ago, and this one is very similar to like Deep Impact, where there's a comet coming to Earth, and he's got to try and get his family to this underground bunker in Greenland, which is the one place that they think is going to be the safest or least hit by either the comet debris, but also the extinction level event that's going to wipe out Earth and all life on Earth, that they'll be the safest there. Basically, there's an arc in Greenland he's trying to get there. So it reminds me a lot of Deep Impact. So, I mean, this might be okay, but it's a late August movie. This doesn't look like it's going to propel him back onto the big screen as a huge action star the way Olympus Has Fallen did. But still, I'm curious to see it. I'm curious to see if it actually makes it to theaters or if it goes on demand. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Relic and Parallax. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's get into the movie reviews and start off with Relic. A woman and her daughter search for her missing mother, who has dementia in a house that might be haunted.
When was the last time you spoke to her?
It's been a few weeks. She thought someone was coming into the house. Do you know where you were, Mum?
I suppose I went out. I thought this was where it got in.
Who?
Whoever it was coming into the house.
It's a horror movie. It's a bona fide horror movie thriller, and it's shot and designed to be like a almost like a haunted house movie. But it's also very much has its foot in reality. Now, it's directed by a woman named Natalie Erica James. This is her directorial debut. And for a directorial debut, it's pretty impressive. For somebody who is working in the horror genre, it manages to hold back. Now, it's got a little bit more of Ari Aster's feel to it. He's the guy who did Hereditary and Midsommar. It's very much a slow burn. And it stars Emily Mortimer and Bella Heathcote as the mother and daughter who are trying to find this older woman who's gone missing. And they're searching the house and they're searching the land because she's kind of out there in the middle of nowhere. It takes place in Australia. So it's kind of not in the outback, but it's in just, you know, it's in a wooded area, which could be America for all you know, because there's a lot of areas like that pretty much anywhere on the globe. They, of course, finally discover her. She shows up again, and there's something off with her. But this is one of those movies that has subtext. This is one of those movies that's more than just a mother and her daughter looking for the grandmother. It's about taking care of your older relatives. Because the grandmother is, clearly, she has issues. She has some mental cognitive issues. She's either got dementia and possibly what could be diagnosed as Alzheimer's, and they're struggling whether they should let her stay at the house or should they should try to put her in a home. And of course, the woman is getting somewhat agitated and she's aggressive about it, which happens with some older people. And if you've not had to deal with an older relative who is at the very least challenging, I'm not talking about the dotty old grandmother who will, you come in and you say, oh, hi, grandmother, and she'll make scones or cookies or whatever, and maybe she's a little bit just goofy in her views. No, I'm talking about somebody who really actually needs attention. Somebody who could potentially be a danger to themselves. And whatever the haunting is that's going on inside her and around her is more symbolic than anything else. There's a certain reality that's in there, but it's to show how we perceive our loved ones as they become more difficult, where you parent the parent and lives flip-flop like that. I'm going through a certain degree of that myself recently. My parents are getting older and there are some issues with them. And I mean, it's not obviously not this and it's not dementia. They're not running around, but I'm certainly in that sandwich generation now where I have to parent my parents and I got to parent my own kids. And that is a huge challenge. And if you've not been there, you don't know what it's like. So, you know, it's going to happen at some point, and it happens to everybody. I know it's going to happen to my sons, and they're going to have to deal with me when I'm crazy and old. But that's the core of what a good horror movie can do. If you can have a horror movie that works as a horror movie, because it does work as this weird, creepy, is it haunted? Is there a demon or whatever? But it also has that subtext that gives you something for real in real life. Good acting to it. Directing's good. If it were a little slower, it would have not worked. But I think James does a good job putting this together. I'm curious to see what else she's got in her arsenal. So I'm going to have to say Relic kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Parallax. A woman suffers psychological trauma when she feels that she is not the person she once was.
She looks at me like she doesn't even know who I am anymore.
If you refuse to take part in the dream, you wake up.
Lucas! Just leave me alone!
Lucas, do not try!
A cold sweat. That chill. A reminder that what you just lived isn't real. There's no sweat.
Kayla, please!
No chill. Just more of the same. You ready? I can't wake up.
As ready as I can be. For whatever this is.
Parallax is a science fiction film, and they present it certainly as a science fiction film in the advertising and in the trailer. When you start watching it, it does not present itself as a science fiction film. It presents itself as more a drama. I was saying in Relic, you're dealing with a woman who's old and possibly got dementia and is not all there and changes personality periodically because that's what happens with dementia patients. This one is more an introverted study of this woman who feels like she's not the same person in her body now. It's her with her fiancé, and they're trying to deal with the problems. And there's some weird things happening, some strange things happening, kind of in the background, and some of the setups that they don't fully address head-on. But overall, I mean, like, the first, almost hour and a half of this movie is just the two of them kind of going rounds and rounds with doctors and psychologists and talking to each other. Unfortunately, the actors in this are not great. They're okay. And the girl, the main character, she narrates it, which is a huge danger. Screenwriters love to put a narration, and it doesn't help having TV shows that live on narration, stuff like Grey's Anatomy. You have an entire generation of screenwriters who grew up watching Grey's Anatomy, and they're like, oh, well, that's how you do it. You have to narrate everything. And that only works in certain contexts, and it can work on a TV show, but in a movie, you should not have the omniscient narrator unless you absolutely need it, because you should be able to tell the story without it. And by having her narrate, it just gets pretentious. And the actress isn't very, she's not fantastic. She's cute and she's pretty and she can kind of act, but she gets quickly annoying because I'd be tired of, I don't know what's so great about her because this guy's in love with her, but they never really show anything that's great about her. And that's a danger when you have, you can't jump into the middle of a love story and just be like, oh, I love you, but you don't see any of the reasons why you love her. You have no flashbacks to what she was like, and you don't get to see the charisma between the two characters and how they fall in love and how the characters develop. On top of it, the guy who plays her fiancé, who's like twice as tall as she is. So there's this weird height difference between the two of them that they use. And I know why they finally did it when I got to the end of the movie, why they frame it so oddly at times. But he's not that good either. Again, there's nothing about him that charges you. There's nothing about him as a character that makes him compelling. He's just kind of this blank. They're both Bellas. Just a blank character who has no depth of character or any qualities that you really would want to spend any time with, from the Twilight movies. And then you get an hour and a half in and finally some things start happening and it starts to get intriguing. You're like, ooh, now this is interesting. Why weren't they doing this earlier? So really that first hour and a half, they should have cut that down considerably. And, you know, that last 20 minutes of the movie are kind of interesting. That would have been nice to have most of the movie be that. So, like, you start it, you really got to sit through a lot of nonsense to get to the interesting stuff. Because you know the interesting stuff's coming, because you know it's presented as a sci-fi movie, so you know there's got to be some sort of surreal or paranormal or speculative fiction angle to it. And so, ultimately, when you get to the end, it's okay, but it struggles a lot with the beginning being a little overly pretentious. But still, I'm going to say Parallax kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Greyhound and the Old Guard. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Greyhound. Tom Hanks stars as a captain of a battleship in World War II in charge of protecting a convoy of supplies on its way to Europe.
Air escort to Greyhound. You will now be out of range of air cover for the next 5 days.
I got some.
Most likely a U-boat.
He's trying to slip under us!
Fire!
We have a kill.
Distress rocket, sir.
We have hits directly on the convoy.
The wolf bag's hunting us.
This was one of those casualties of the coronavirus. It was supposed to be a big screen movie that came out this summer. And in general, for the most part, the movies that have pivoted to digital, I think are fine on digital. Scoob was fine on digital. Trolls World Tour was fine on digital. You know, and shows like My Spy or Irresistible or, you know, even Hamilton. It works. Yeah, sure, it would have been cool to see it in the theater. Yeah, but I don't know if it needed to be in the theater. It is a shame, however, that Greyhound did not get a theatrical run. Because it is a big screen movie, it almost entirely, with the exception of just a little snippet at the beginning and a little snippet at the end, almost the entire movie takes place on the water in this battleship. And a good chunk of it takes place on the bridge and on the deck. Now, there's some, you know, high angle shots and underwater shots. But, I mean, for the most part, you're embedded in there with the crew of this battleship. And Tom Hanks does a great job in the role. Of course he does a great job. And there's an interview with him going around this week. And it's sort of a heartbreaking interview because he's like, it is heartbreaking that this didn't get in the theaters. But he's like, of course, it's more important that people stay healthy. So it's going on Apple TV Plus. Apple picked this up and put it on its service because one of the things that Apple is facing, and Disney Plus is kind of facing the same thing, only they got a little bit more to draw from. Apple Plus does not have that library of content as a streaming service that Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix have. Because you can watch all the new stuff on any of those three services, and there's still hours and hours of TV shows and movies that you can deep dive into and watch, and they rotate that throughout the month. Disney Plus has all the Disney Channel stuff and the Freeform stuff, I think, or at least some of the Freeform stuff. But Apple TV doesn't have the background of it. They just have their original shows. And I remember when Apple TV first announced itself, I said that's going to be a struggle for them because you want to have the library of content that people can go to once they finish watching the new stuff. And that's the way it is, you know, on Disney is if you've already gone and watched all the Marvel stuff and you've watched all the Star Wars stuff and you watch The Mandalorian, what else are you watching on Disney unless you got kids that are watching Disney Channel type stuff? So it's good that Apple has picked this up because it's a good movie. I've heard some negative things about it, and I don't know what these people are thinking. I mean, yeah, there's obviously the effects look good, but you can tell there are effects. But we're at that point now with digital effects that you just assume everything is an effect. But this is an intense movie. It's only an hour and a half, so it's actually relatively short, especially for like a World War II movie. But it's just about them trying to defend this convoy and keep the, you know, these U-boats are under there trying to blow ships up. And they're trying to blow up the U-boats, you know, with depth charges and that sort of thing. And when they surface, they're trying to shoot guns at them. But you're also looking at the fact that they're using rudimentary technology. I mean, stuff from the 40s. Now we have sonar and submersibles and radar and all this other technology stuff that they didn't have back in the day where you just had this guy listening to literally just a guy sitting there listening to a microphone waiting for a ping off the surface of a U-boat. It's not a U-boat movie because I know some people get that wrong. It's not, they're not on a U-boat. They're on a battleship, but they're fighting U-boats because the Germans had the U-boats in the water. And I gotta say, this is a thrilling, well-executed, gripping tale, and it shows the real danger of being in a convoy like that. So yeah, I have to say, Greyhound's a fantastic movie. I really, really enjoyed it. I was glued to my set or my computer when I watched it. It's fantastic. It's absolutely worth checking out. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's do the next movie review, and that is The Old Guard. Charlize Theron plays an immortal warrior who has a team of other immortals that help her seek justice in the world.
So you good guys or bad guys?
Depends on the century.
So we really never die.
Throughout history, we've protected this world, fighting in the shadows. But it's nearly impossible to disappear in the world we live in today.
These are extraordinary individuals. They are extremely resistant to capture.
They're going to lock us up and weaponize us. But they've never faced an army like ours.
This movie is a struggle for me because, on one hand, I love Charlize Theron. I think she's a formidable action star. I loved seeing her start to do action roles. And even if they're absurdly stupid action roles, like the villain in one of those Fast and Furious movies. And, you know, even Atomic Blonde. Atomic Blonde has some great stuff, but Atomic Blonde's not, it certainly is not a James Bond movie. It certainly it does not have that level of quality to it. It drags at some point. But Atomic Blonde, she's great in. And I thought she was good in Mad Max Fury Road, even though I don't think it's the greatest movie of that year or even of the franchise. But Mad Max Fury Road, she's fine in that. And I think she's a formidable opponent. And I'd love to see more Charlize Theron being John Wick. I enjoy that. You know, not just because she's easy on the eyes, but I think she empowers that role. The Old Guard is based on, I don't know whether it's a comic book or a graphic novel, but it's, I think, through Image Comics. And it's basically about these immortals. So it's a superhero story. I mean, there are these people who if they get shot, they heal, and they've been around. Like, one of them's been around since the War of 1812. These other guys have been out there since the Crusades. And Charlize Theron's character is so old, they don't even say. They just say it's way older than you'd ever expect. The problem with this is, The dialogue is, it's the writing's not good. And in the main story is they found this new recruit who's this girl who's a Marine, or this woman who's a Marine, and she's killed in the line of duty, but she heals. And then, of course, Charlize Theron, for somehow they track her down and they want to have her join their team. And I guess there's Chiwetel Ejiofor plays a questionable character who's trying to get them, so that they can, like, basically refine in out of their body why they're immortal and like use that to help make medicines and stuff. But even then, sort of like, who's the bad guy and who's the good guy? It just takes forever to get to the point of, I was watching the movie thinking, what's the point of it? Why are they there? I mean, we don't know where they're going. We don't know what they're doing. We don't know what their objective is. And that, I found that very frustrating. Plus, the dialogue's really bad. and sure, there are some great action sequences. But I mean, if you compare it to something like that one with Chris Hemsworth that came out a couple months ago, that one had a focus and it had a lot, and you knew what his objective was. Now, The Old Guard's getting a lot of buzz, and it's getting a lot of people saying it's great. And I think part of that is, A, there's a lot of people who want Charlize Theron to have a big action franchise. And I get that, and I wouldn't mind seeing her do that. Like I said, I'd love to see a female John Wick with her in the lead. But this is also directed by a woman named Gina Prince-Blythewood, and her biggest claim to fame is doing a movie like Love and Basketball or The Secret Life of Bees. And then there was one called Beyond the Lights, which I think I saw, but I blocked it out. It was so boring. She does romances, and now she's doing this action film, and I just don't think it works. I think there's a lot of people that want this to succeed because they're like, it's an action movie based on a comic book with female leads and a female director. That's not enough for me. It still also has to be a good movie. And this has some good moments, but it still has some serious problems. So I'm going to have to say that The Old Guard, while I wanted it to be really good, it wasn't. It kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Most Dangerous Game and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring They Live. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's change gears a little bit. We're still going to be doing movie reviews, but I want to talk about a different service. And I'm a little bit behind on this one, so forgive me. There's a service out there called Quibi, and it's designed to be short attention span theater. It has these movies and television series that are broken down into 5 to 10 minute chunks. Now, some of them are just episodes of a TV show that are 5 to 10 minutes in length. Other ones are essentially, you can have a feature length film, but it's broken up into segments that are 7 or 8 minutes long. Really, all that is if you watch them all in a row, if you're watching one of the movies or an episode of the TV that's longer than that specific time, it's just like having ads in it. And you just go to the next episode after the ad break. So it's not that jarring of something to watch, but it's the kind of thing that you can watch for 20 minutes when you wake up or when you're taking a dump. Not to be too crass about it. Or if you're on the bus and you're going to work and you got a 15 minute commute, you can watch one or two of these. You can download them there. Quibi launched in April, and I have a friend, Ed Douglas, who, the Weekend Warrior, he introduced me to it. He said, oh, you should look into this. This one, your audience might be interested in this. And recently, Quibi has been doing a big advertising push. I've seen ads for a lot of their stuff online and even just, you know, watching like on Hulu, they'll embed ads for other services, and Quibi's one of them. And they're really pushing Most Dangerous Game, which is one of their full-length feature films. It stars Liam Hemsworth and Christoph Waltz, so it's got major names in it. And even though that came out in April, a lot of people are discovering it now. They're doing this push now that they've got a library of content. You know, when it started, they only had so much, and they're adding more and more and more each week. So I thought I'd give a look at Most Dangerous Game because it's one of the big ones they're pushing. And so maybe a lot of people are seeing it or wondering whether or not to download it. And you get like 2 weeks free and then it's $5 a month. Liam Hemsworth plays a man who agrees to be hunted for 24 hours in order to win a large sum of money.
If I just had some cash, I'd get some treatment. Maybe see my son be born.
Think you can help me somehow?
I do, but I can't do it alone.
I make possible man's innate desire to be challenged in a highly intense sport, hunting.
You'd want them to hunt me? Like tag or something?
The sport in its purest form, a hunt to kill.
When does it start?
It just did.
Now, if you recognize this plot, that's because it's been done a billion times before. Of course, most famously, the book, The Most Dangerous Game, which was made into a movie, The Most Dangerous Game. But that movie idea, the idea of people hunting people, is all over pop culture. There is a movie called Bloodlust in the 60s that was done on Mystery Science Theater that is essentially this. I think in the movie Octopussy, which is a James Bond movie, the bad guy hunts James Bond. There's an episode of Fantasy Island where they do this. And of course, the Hunger Games and Battle Royale. The Hunt. Remember The Hunt right before COVID shut everything down? The Hunt was this movie about people hunting other people for political reasons. And we've seen this a billion times. So it's not a new concept, but you know, hey, this is just the new iteration of it. And the showrunner of this is the guy who does Prison Break and Breakout Kings. He's an action TV guy, Nick Santora. And this seems like it's within his wheelhouse because, you know, he does action TV. And this works for that. Now it's a limited production budget. It's mostly just Liam Hemsworth, and they have some locations, but also some restricted locations, and they have a couple other actors. There's, of course, one or two big action moments. There's an explosion. But overall, you can see where once they get past the price of Christoph Waltz and Liam Hemsworth, that they are running it on a budget. And, you know, I gotta say, it kept my interest. I mean, like I said, it felt like these commercial breaks. You know, there are like 15 segments to it for it. It's about a 2-hour movie. So each segment's 7 to 10 minutes long, and you watch it, and it's, you know, it's okay. It's good. It works. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's a nice little throwaway action thriller. I just wish you could watch it on something bigger than your phone. But that's what Quibi is designed for. So I'm going to have to say that I liked it. I'm going to say Most Dangerous Game kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Now, of course, the big release this week is Trolls World Tour. I didn't get my copy of it early enough to actually go through the special features and everything, so I'm going to be talking more about that next week. But I want to focus on a movie from the past. I like, you know, and as you know, I like to go back and watch old movies, especially movies from the 80s, because that's when I grew up. And the one I want to highlight this week is They Live. I've been watching a lot of John Carpenter stuff. Part of it is because Shout Factory has been doing some fantastic releases of John Carpenter's works. And I know on the show I've talked about Memoirs of an Invisible Man, which is in his most famous work. I recently talked about Escape from LA, but they have stuff like Prince of Darkness, and I've talked about Mouth of Madness. There's a lot of John Carpenter movies out there, and he had this incredible run from Halloween all the way up to Mouth of Madness. For about 15 years, he had this just incredible run through the late 70s into the 80s and the 90s. And They Live's one of them, so I wanted to talk about that. John Carpenter's 1988 classic follows a drifter who discovers that aliens live in secret among us and manipulate politics, the economy, and society.
What do these things want, and why are they here?
You still don't get it, do you, boy?
They have recruited the rich and the powerful.
They're running the whole show.
Wake up! They're all about you, all around you. Blinded us to the truth.
Take a look.
They are safe as long as they are not discovered.
I don't know what they are or where they came from, but we gotta stop them.
Stay away from me.
Put these on.
They have us.
Look at them. They're everywhere.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
First of all, that is one of the most famous lines from that movie. And it demonstrates part of what I love, but I'm also intensely frustrated about with this movie. This is one of those 50-50 films. There are parts of this movie that are absolutely brilliant. There's a scene in there, a whole sequence, it's like, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes long, where he first puts on the glasses. They have these sunglasses that filter out the signal the aliens give. So when he puts on the glasses, he sees things as they are. And not only does he see the aliens, but he sees, you know, all the advertisement is saying, obey, don't question authority. Money is printed that says, this is your God. And it's all about subliminal messaging and suppressing the average people. And the scene where he first puts on the sunglasses and discovers that is one of the best directed scenes of the decade. It is so well done. And there's other elements to it that are really, really well done. Even just the setup and the idea and the general path of the story. Very, very interesting. But then there's other parts that are just stupid. And like the line about chewing bubblegum is a great line. And I laugh every time I see it, but it's just so stupid. And there's a lot of that in that movie. I mean, it's entertaining and fun, but it's this weird mix of absolutely brilliant and dumb filmmaking, which you don't get necessarily. Like Prince of Darkness is on its own very straightforward. And like, even like, Escape from New York and Escape from LA, certainly they're goofy and silly, but there's not a whole lot of brilliance to those movies. But this one has the brilliance of Prince of Darkness and The Thing, and then the stupidity of vampires or ghosts of Mars. Also, this is a great movie to watch because there's a wonderful meme, and it shows there's a scene where he tries to get Keith David to put on the sunglasses, and Keith David just won't. And they have like a 6-minute fight in an alleyway that just is them pounding on each other. And I must have watched this movie 3 or 4 times before I ever sat through it, because I remember when I first got it on VHS, I'm just like, okay, this is boring, and I'll fast forward through the fight scene, and the fight scene takes a long time to fast forward through, let alone watch. But the whole thing is he just won't put on the stupid glasses. And to me, this is a nice little, you know, weird, sudden loop around 32 years later, microcosm of the mask debate. Just wear the mask. Just do the right thing. Say it doesn't do any good. At the very least, maybe you'll help somebody. But no, I refuse to wear a mask. I refuse. I refuse. And then people go on rants. You've seen them online. Watching this 6-minute fight scene in the alleyway reminds me of that. And that makes me chuckle, but it also makes me weep. But overall, They Live is a great movie. It's a lot of fun. If you've never seen it, it's worth seeing for at least the 50% of brilliance that it is. But it stars Roddy Rowdy Piper, so, you know, be ready for stupidity. Anyways, They Live, I totally love. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that is it for this week. Next week, I'm going to talk about a spotlight on Trolls World Tour. But, of course, I'm not going to talk about Tenet, because it's not coming out next week, even though they promised. Until then, have a fat time at the movies. Or at home.